Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Did I answer the question or did I go off on a long tangent?
Both.
Welcome to Behind the Sins, presented by CinemaSins.
Welcome to Behind the Sins, your weekly look at all things CinemaSins, TV Sins, and commercial Sins. I'm your host, Aaron, but not that Aaron, of course. And this week I'm joined by CinemaSins co-founder, Chris Atkinson.
Hello.
Well then, let's dive into the Sinside scoop.
What's he building in there?
We'll kick things off with Monday's video, The Mandalorian, Season 1, Episode 7. This seemed a little weird. I thought all the Mandalorian episodes were done, but I guess there are a couple that slipped through the cracks. Are you excited for Season 3?
I've let so many things slip through the cracks over the last couple of years that, no, I'm not, like, jonesing to see Mandalorian Season 3. I think the last season did end on some things where you're like, oh... Mm-hmm. So they're going to be doing that, are they? And now I'm like, it's been so long since they came out with that season that I'm just kind of like, all right, I'm going to have to like re-binge it, I think, to understand what's going on anymore. But I do remember how season two kind of like left things.
Yeah.
So I will probably end up watching it, though, because it's fun. And I've watched the first two seasons and I enjoyed them, so.
Yeah, and I know a lot of people on Twitter are like, you know, thinking like, I really liked this show, but like, we liked it because like, it wasn't a show about Jedi. It was a show about other things in Star Wars culture. And like, there's a trailer that I haven't seen that is just going to, I think, involve that world a little bit more, you know, the Jedi culture. Yeah. And I am a little nervous, but like, after the first two seasons, why would I have any doubts that Jon Favreau is going to come up with something magical, you know?
Yeah.
So The Reckoning, Aaron and Daniel writing on this one. None will be free until the old ways are gone forever, and yet the sequel trilogy tells us the old ways don't disappear. Somehow they returned.
Yep.
Always love a good somehow Palpatine returned jab.
Mm-hmm.
Those things were poisonous, too. This scene has more random tension than the time I saw my friend John start a fight with a car seat and lose.
Mm-hmm.
I want to know, but also, like, it's one of those, like, you let your imagination run, and it's like, now I'm thinking, like, an animated car scene, like, Cuphead style, and, you know, mm-hmm. like, Looney Tunes style. It's like... I like that image in my head, so I'm gonna stick with that.
I should have gone and asked them if that was based on some sort of real story, like not necessarily someone lost to a car seat, but at least made themselves look like an ass fighting with a car seat, you know, something like that.
Look, I'm sure the real story is somebody was a new parent trying to install a car seat and got frustrated, and
yes.
That's just not fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What are some of the things you had from the video?
There's some obvious Aaron Dicer-isms in mm-hmm. this one. Disney Plus refuses to give us a spinoff of Taika Waititi droid. I just like the idea of calling him the Waititi droid. And I don't know who did this one. I don't know who wrote this one. And it's funny because in another video that we are talking about this week, the terms were messed up. So it's even within the CinemaSins universe that the terms lying and laying get messed up. This is a thing for me. Like I feel like I'm in the minority these days because everybody says, I'm going to go lay down. I'm laying down. I'm laying this. And it's like, no, you're lying down. You're going to go lie down. If you need to lay, you lay brick, you lay something down. You have to have an object to lay down. And so someone, I'm gonna randomly guess Daniel. So, you know, did the one about the laying and lying, which spoke to my soul in this, when somebody says he's laying down or whatever, and it's like, but then, yes, in another video, and I don't know if we'll get to it. I mean, within the context of that video, but the Pinocchio video, one of the sins writes laying down, and I was like, oh, we just talked about this, guys, or somebody just talked about this and somebody completely ignored it. But I thought that was fun. Just making me watch other people watch this ship land, I thought was funny. The guy dying after one shot because of the shoddy armor, and then going mm-hmm. on a rant about like why, if there's these armories that are selling all this crappy armor to everybody. And then, yeah, this one also speaks to my soul. This is one of my biggest issues with movies. And of course, I mean, this is a classic one, but Moff Gideon beating around the bush, telling Werner Herzog about them not having Grogu with them while he's talking to him on the hologram phone, you know, basically burying the lead is what the sin says, burying the lead and basically giving the good guys a chance in the scene instead of just saying, hey, they don't have Grogu, and then just going ahead and killing them. The main bad guy actually stalls for the good guys in that scene.
Speaking of Moff Gideon, after the cockpit opens, this is his worst Jack in the Box ever.
Yeah, it's a good one. And what's good about this one, this is what's so important about in our own editing of something that is already an edited program. How much do you show? How much do you cut? How much do you make the, you know, what's the pacing of our own video and everything? It's so much better that we show that full opening and then the narration comes in.
Also wanted to point out, you guys take a sin off for Giancarlo Esposito's performance as Moff Gideon. And I just came across a really fun story recently that he was on, I think Jimmy Fallon, talking about doing this role. And Jon Favreau calls him and he's like, hey, I've got this role. It's in a Star Wars show. I'm doing the Star Wars show and I want you to be this villain guy. He's at the point in his career now where he can just kind of do what he wants. He's making so much money off of Breaking Bad residuals and now, I guess, Better Call Saul residuals and all that. Like, he's said he can just do whatever he wants now, right?
Yeah.
So he says, like, I want to work with people that I like. I don't want to, you know, because Jon Favreau's telling him, like, well, we put all the money into the volume, so, like, I don't have any money to give you. Like, I have very little money to give you. Which, Moff Gideon has, like, 10 seconds of screen time in season one, like, you know.
Yeah.
It's practically a cameo.
Right.
He says all the money's in the volume, so I don't really have money to get you. He's like, well, John, I like you, and I want to work with people that I like. So let me think about it, and I'll come back to you. And he calls back, and he says, I have one condition. I want a cape. And he's like, done. So, like, I was watching that clip with my wife, and, like, my favorite thing is, like, I love when actors are, like, children inside, especially like Giancarlo Esposito, who's now known as Gus Fring. He's like now known as this really sinister, really serious person, and you just find out like he's just a little kid inside. It's yeah. Adorable.
I'm so happy for him too, because, you know, he had been around for a really long time, and I think most people, at least my age, were probably first introduced to him in The Usual Suspects, and then probably saw Do the Right Thing before that, but Do the Right Thing was another one that he shined in, and it just took him all the way up until Breaking Bad to finally get that like super recognition that he'd always probably deserved. So I think we'll probably that won't be the last time we take off sins for Giancarlo Esposito, probably.
Sure. Yeah, he's blown up since Breaking Bad, but it's one of those that, like, I don't think I ever saw him in anything before Breaking Bad. But then you just see him everywhere now. Even, like, I think I saw Do the Right Thing, like, after I saw the Breaking Bad. It's like, oh, that's Gus Fring, you know?
Or
that's...
Yeah, yeah. But being completely not Gus Fring at all, you know?
Right, right.
Yeah.
Looks like one of his first performances was in Sesame Street. Like, I want to go back and see that. Like,
Yeah,
there's, like, plenty of good stuff. Like, just seeing him pop up in places. You're right. It's kind of nice that he's getting the recognition that he deserves. What do you think the over-under is on how many IMDb credits he has?
Ooh. So, I'm usually pretty good at this. He's not someone who's been in everything. He's not a Samuel L. Jackson. But I imagine he's probably got at this point, a long career. I mean, he was in Fresh too. Let's say 69.
According to the IMDb, he has, in terms of just previous, not upcoming, 190.
Wow. So he must like do a lot of voices and stuff too, like cartoon voices and things like
that. He's Lex Luthor and Harley Quinn.
Because usually you don't get that much unless you rack up a voiceover.
He's got a lot of like one episode in the TV series. One episode of Touched by an Angel in 2000.
Yeah, that makes sense. It makes sense that it's way more than I think it is. But wow, I obviously never would have guessed that. I guessed 69. So, and I didn't guess 69 for any hilarious reasons. I just, that was the number that popped in my head. Maybe that doesn't make it any better. I am surprised it's that many. Yeah.
Sure. And then the other scent I had written down for this one is there's that mysterious force healing ability again, and one more force ghost of Qui-Gon looks on before walking away muttering, "That is such bullshit."
Yep. Yep.
I think that maybe Qui-Gon's wounds were a little bit more severe, but yeah. But the sin stands.
Yeah. If they wanted to save him, they would have.
Especially because it's like, you could say that about Ben Kenobi, but like his death, well, I mean, I guess both their deaths were sacrifices for the next generation, but it's like, but Qui-Gon was surrounded by Mace Windu and Yoda and Shakti and Kit Fisto, all these like
all the Jedi were still alive at the time.
Right.
When, you know, so yeah,
Ben was the last Jedi. And then and apparently Ahsoka survived all that too. So
yeah. Right.
Yeah. Moving on to Tuesday's video, Need for Speed, you and Ian writing on this one. I wasn't excited for this movie when it came out. I still haven't seen it. Okay. But I remember the reviews kind of being like, it's not bad, but it sounds like, or it seems like this movie kind of has a bit of a cult following based off of like YouTube comments and all that. What is this movie worth watching?
It was an interesting thing going to the YouTube comments on this video, because it was a lot of people going, Need for Speed is so great, and Need for Speed is better than Fast and Furious. And I was like, I'm sitting there going, I may like this better than Fast and Furious, but I did not realize there were so many people that were like Need for Speed fans out there. I think it does have a cult following. I think it actually did well overseas, and there has been talk about making a sequel to this. And that's the reason why we did this video back in September. We wrote the script for this because the box office mojo on their schedule was showing a Need for Speed 2 on October. Every bit of research that I looked at for a Need for Speed 2, first off, there's no poster, there's no trailer, there's no nothing. It obviously was it's something that they threw on there as a penciled in type of thing, and they still haven't made it officially yet. They still haven't done it. But you never know, like a month or so down the line, whether or not they were going to make that, or they're secretly making it, or they're about to come out with it or whatever. So we wrote a script just in case they came out with a sequel. Obviously, a sequel has not come out, but you can still find that it's in development or something on the IMDb. After a while, it just became, all right, we've got this video, let's come out with it, you know, just to fill in a part of the schedule. And that's how Need for Speed ended up being this late January release for us. So I rewatched this video, and this is a video that I've seen many times going through the editing and all that. And I had to refresh my memory on it, 'cause it was like 5 months ago that we did this. So yeah. This was a fun one to take apart. I think a lot of the things that happen in this don't make much sense to me at all. The whole De Leon race, that makes no sense, and how it's set up, and how he ends up getting into it. And I went through a lot of research about crimes on this one, because because there's a lot to do with the, like, whether or not Dino, played by Dominic Cooper, is responsible for the death, and would he be charged in the death of this dude that dies in the early part of it, and what would constitute evidence of that. And like, I called somebody I know who's a friend of the show, who's a lawyer, about a lot of these different things. And even though it wasn't his area of expertise and everything. I said, you can't just find a car in somebody's garage and just say, oh, he was responsible for that guy's death, right? You can't just, because the law doesn't rarely works the way we think it should. It's not like, right. It's not like some magical thing like, ha, there's the car. It proves everything. It doesn't really. It rarely ever does. But anyway, going off on a lot of tangents there. Anyway, what do you want to, where do we want to go with this?
If this toothpick was such an integral part of his character, why was it in his mouth the first time we saw him?
Oh, my God. Believe me, if you ever see anything about eating or like something in somebody's mouth, you can almost bet that I wrote it. Because I noticed this like an insane amount of times, and it bothers me, and I can't explain why. I probably have a psychological problem. I understand this. But this guy has his toothpick, and it's for no reason. It's like I feel like it's an actor crutch. So I really, really hated it. And it kept showing up. I was like, he wouldn't show up in this like this, did he? And I went back to the first scene of the movie where he's introduced. And I was like, he didn't have a toothpick then. So why is it such an integral part of his character now? Anyway.
Yeah. And there was like four or five instances. Like there was even like at the funeral, he still has a toothpick in his mouth.
Yeah.
Man, I haven't seen a character so obviously gonna die since that one dude in The Meg who was taking a swim after they caught the shark they thought was The Meg. The Meg is getting a sequel this year. Did you know that?
Yeah, yeah. I was also the writer, one of the writers on The Meg, and you know, that dude who's out in the middle of the water in his like little inflatable or whatever, just like enjoying the water, they caught the shark and everything. I was like oh my God, just set this dude, like, just go ahead and kill this dude already. And so yeah, this guy in Need for Speed, I don't know what his most popular role would be, but if you've seen Upgrade, he's the guy who's like funding all the stuff in Upgrade. He shows up and he's talking about the future, and he's got all this wide-eyed like excitement about everything. And I'm just like, ah, you poor bastard. You're definitely going to die. There's no way. There's no way you survive this movie. The movie doesn't have room for you, basically. Yeah. So you're going to die easily. And you know, him talking about you're going to take this car and you're going to win the De Leon with it and all that. And it's just like, there's sometimes writers just telegraph by just doing something a little bit over the top that just kind of just says, all right, he's not meant for this movie, the rest of this movie.
I kind of hope like the next time we see a sin like this, it's like, I haven't seen a death this obvious since Pete. And then like there could be a recurring, like now you go back and watch the Need for Speed video. And then it's like, then you got to go watch the Meg video. And it's like, maybe there's a joke about that. I haven't seen a guy that's obviously about to die since, you know, the Expendables.
It's a good idea. probably a good idea. Because just to build on it over and over and over again would be amazing.
Speaking of Pete's death, now that Toby's won this race for Pete, who predicted that he would win the race in this car and there'd be a lighthouse at the end of it, I'm wondering why he couldn't predict his own death.
Yes, exactly. It's just insane to me. The guy, like, to the detail knows what his buddy's gonna do, but has no idea what his own future is in all of this. You would think that, you know, it would tell him, you know, he's not there to see it. He doesn't. Yeah, and as I think Ian's earlier sin mentions, it's like there's predicting the future and then there's reading the end of the screenplay, because that's exactly he goes down to the detail of what's going to happen. And you know, when you see a power that's this incredible, it's like, why doesn't this guy use this more, like for things that really matter? That the De Leon is like such an unimportant thing to use this power on.
Pete's death is so long and drawn out, I'm halfway expecting to see a slow motion ghost face show up from the back seat and stab him after the car flips over a bridge.
I feel embarrassed because like every one that you picked so far are ones that I've written, so I'm gonna sit here and talk about these. Yes, we already know he's gonna die, okay? Like if you've watched a movie before, you know he's going to die. I don't know what it is about directors. I don't think it started with Zack Snyder, but there's this idea that we have to do everything now. Every dramatic moment has to be in slow motion. It has to like be in this over the top, just like never ending manner. And that's exactly what happens. And I'm sitting there thinking, what if I actually did think, what if the Zucker brothers in the back in the day were to do a parody of this scene? What would it look like? And it would be like long and drawn out, and then like something completely ridiculous, like Ghostface showing up in the back seat of the car. It's going to be stabbing him while the car is wrecking. And I just thought that was a funny image, and yeah, wrote it down.
Maybe here's a sin you didn't write. I think maybe sin for the week for me right here is the tattoo says Pete 396, and it says, I don't think I ever made it that far in the Bible.
I actually think I did write that one.
It's just one of those where it's like, what context could Pete 396 be? Because even if you're talking like a birthday, right? Like maybe mm-hmm. March 1996 would be it, but like you can't, like there's no way it could be March 96, maybe March 906, but then he's super young.
Yeah.
Like there's no way it could be 396. Like what on earth could this 396 mean?
I think that I looked for an answer to this. It's a V8 engine is a 396. That's the reason why it's on there. So that's the reason why he's got Pete 396 on the thing. And I was like, okay, that has something to do with a V8 engine. Fantastic. I don't need to know that to write this in, right? I can just ignore this. And so, yeah, I did write this one actually. When I ran across that too, I was like, I don't remember if I wrote that or if that was Ian, but that was definitely me. But yeah, I remember that's one of those where you just do the ignorant thing. Like I did want to know what 396 could have meant in this context. Yeah. And I did find out what it meant. And then I said, I'm going to pretend I didn't see that. and all in the service of a Bible joke. And, I was very happy with it. So anyway, I'm glad that you
Me
liked
too.
It.
There's a moment where, who's the character that flies the helicopter? What's the actor?
It's Kid Cudi.
Kid Cudi. That's right. I couldn't remember. Yeah. I'm like, I know it was like one of those pop star turned actor
yeah.
guys. he's flying the helicopter. He's like, this is just like Speed. Yes, this is just like Speed, except there's no bomb. None of our protagonists are on the bus and the bus driver looks nothing like Sandra Bullock.
Yeah. Yeah, Ian did write this one, and we both wrote a sin for this because it obviously doesn't look a thing like Speed at all. It's just you making a Speed reference, and everybody's like, ha, 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 Speed. And we ended up going with Ian's. Ian's was a little bit better articulated.
Last one, I promise. Hooray, he's going to win. Wait, what does he win again? Oh, right, the other racers' cars, and it just, like, is a short montage of all the destroyed cars.
Yeah.
Like, at least, like, in the Fast and Furious street races when they do that, like, you win the other person's car. Like, they do, like, these races that, like, all the cars are actually crossing the finish line, you know?
Yeah.
This is like a later Fast and the Furious movie where they just blow them up with rocket launchers, you know?
I don't get this at all. In fact, in the movie, and I think we may have had some sins about this, but I can't remember if they were cut or what. But Dominic Cooper, who plays Dino, has won mm-hmm. this race before. And in that same storage shed where he's got the Koenigsegg car, he's got the cars that he won in the De Leon, and they're all like smashed up. Like, I think they're all like, if I recall, they're all just smashed up. They don't have any value, really, I don't think. And that's what's so odd about Aaron Paul calling the rich dude and saying, I'm going to win $4 million worth of cars on this race. And like, all of the cars are just going to end up being smashed up at the end. They're totaled. There's no way
you get them fixed. It's going to cost the cost of the car.
Yeah. Yeah. So I, that's one thing the movie does not explain at all. And maybe if you're a professional street racer, you know exactly what's going on there, but I had no idea from the movie. The movie doesn't tell you a thing.
That's all I had. You feel free to say all the ones that you really liked and want to mention I missed.
Ian found that Confederate statue in the middle of uh-huh. that New York, that supposedly New York town, uh-huh. and he asked me, because he's British, would a town in New York have a Confederate statue? And I was like, no, they would not. And they shot this in Georgia. So that was how the whole Confederate statue sin came about. And then, of course, we also had to send Confederates.
We will do things a little differently for this Wednesday video, The Last of Us, because Chris, you said you were waiting to watch the show until you finished playing the game.
Yeah. So far, every Monday since this series aired, I've been playing The Last of Us on a Twitch stream, CinemaSins Live. So I just went into it going, I don't want to know anything about the game before I go in. This is, of course, been readily apparent as soon as I started playing the game that I knew nothing about it, and started playing it without any practice time or anything like that, and whatever. So like the first day, I was like trying to learn controls, and I died probably a good 25-30 times in this one scene because I didn't know what the hell was going on. Didn't know how to rectify the situation. I just kept going headfirst into it without knowing. So that's sort of been the entertainment for a lot of people, is watching me go into situations and dying immediately. And apparently I have a bloodlust in this game. A lot of people like try to get through a scene like by trying to like sneak past people and stuff. Not me, man. I murder everybody that I run into. So that's another
thing. How else are we going to stop the zombie apocalypse?
Right. That's the way I feel about it. Like you gotta kill them when you got a chance. So yeah, there's been some numerous hilarious moments where I've been trying to go into situations where there's guns being fired at me and I'm sitting there punching them. And the reason why I'm punching them is because I don't know how to get my gun back in my hand. How did that happen? How did it even get to the point where I was just punching somebody? I don't know. And so a lot of times stuff like that was happening. I didn't know how to make things. I didn't know how to do certain things. And so I was going through all this, just kind of dying and like learning and things like that. So anyway, people have been, a handful of people have been watching me on Monday nights play The Last of Us. And I've played it for the last three nights. Be playing that until I get done and having a lot of fun with it.
And you're enjoying your time with the game?
Yeah, absolutely. I obviously heard about this game when it came out. I didn't have a PS4, I don't believe, when this game came out. I wasn't playing games at all when it came out.
It originally came out on the PlayStation 3. And then
did it?
The PlayStation 4 version is like a remaster with all the add-ons. The PlayStation 5 is a complete remake.
Yeah, the last PlayStation I had before I bought a 4 was the first one. The first PlayStation.
Okay. That second one is goated, man.
Yeah, I played a lot of games on that first one, and then just I grew out of it, and I would still follow things about games and things like that, but yeah. I just didn't. So when Last of Us came out, I heard about it, people talking about how great this was and where they, I just kind of pushed that to a side. I was like, I don't feel like I'll ever play that game. So I'm going to push that news out to the side. And then this sequel came out and there were all the news stories about that came out. Mm-hmm. And I was like, eh.
Are you going to pick up The Last of Us Part 2 on the streams after this?
Yeah, there's a chance. There's a lot of potential ways to go with it.
So Ian's recorded some stuff for The Last of Us Part because Ian and Jonathan wrote on this video. So they're going to, we're going to insert some audio there, and then I'm going to record separately the sins that I had liked. We'll put that all together because we are saving Chris's entire Last of Us TV show experience until he's done playing the game. So we'll put that in now, and then we'll jump to Thursday's video. All right, before I kick it over to Ian for the Last of Us video, I wanted to run through the sins I liked here. The 1968 title card might be the most unnecessary title card ever to title card. I think the plethora of cigarettes and 29 different shades of beige all gave us the context clues we required. Shows mentioning the Atkins diet is the mid-aughts, what beige and cigarettes are to the 60s. Yep, that's the way to get kids into Jesus. Math. Ha ha ha, yeah, math and raisins. I feel the Lord! Schindler's Red Petticoat, which points to the little kid's high tops. Call me a wimp, but I think two child deaths in less than 3 minutes may be pushing me to my HBO Max. And lastly, I just realized in this universe, the fungi infection spreading was probably why Firefly was canceled and not because of the terrible Fox executives. plenty of good stuff to like about this. I thought some really creative, really fun scenes in here, specifically about the beige. And then I had one question to ask Ian, which I'm sure he will address in there. And it says, concerning the belt clip sin, Jonathan wrote that sin because he had the exact same belt clip case, right? Because it's that one where it's like a cover of a Nokia phone. And the sin is that they, with the belt clip case thing, like he still puts it in his pocket. And like, look, Jonathan just kind of seems like the person that would have that exact same thing, right? So please, Ian, tell me that I'm right.
Right. Okay. Here are my thoughts on The Last of Us. Because Chris didn't want to talk about it for obvious reasons. He hasn't seen the show yet, so he didn't want to get spoiled by watching the Sims video, because people watching the Sims video is a terrible way of consuming your content, but please keep doing it. Because Chris has also been playing The Last of Us on Twitch. Yes, that's a plug for Twitch. Come and join us every Monday at 7:30 p.m. Central for the closest thing to video game Sims that you're ever going to see. Chris sins the game, plays through all of it, picks out movie posters that are in the universe and books and things, and it's a jolly good laugh by all. Come and join us. I'm the one talking to you all in the chat. But yes, about the show. Love the show. I only played the game once back when it came out on my friend's PlayStation, so it was a little bit disjointed. But yeah, absolutely loved the pilot. I think it's Nico Parker? The young actor that plays Joel's daughter is so freaking good. Like, so good, I wouldn't have even been sad if she ended up being Ellie. The good lady that plays Ellie, whose name has escaped me, Bella Ramsey, she's incredible. But they're both so good, I wouldn't have minded even if the roles were switched. Yeah, really, really, really well done. It's a great pilot. It sets up the universe. I think one of the sins was, this isn't just like a good video game pilot. This is a good pilot that happens to have something to do with a video game. The cast is absolutely stacked. I don't want to spoil anything for the rest of the season, but the cast that they've managed to pull together for this is so good. So yeah, I had loads of fun with it. But because it was video games and it was apocalypse, it was very, very, very easy to sin. I love sinning the 2003 things, because whenever you have like a period thing that's set in the past, you have to pick out the really stereotypical things, like Atkins. Now, Atkins obviously ties into the whole lack of carbs and lack of flour thing, which is quite clever in universe, but it still felt like the most 2003 thing that they could have possibly said. And I loved picking out that DVD. One of my buddies messaged me and said, "You absolute troll, of course you found a DVD in a shelf that proved it wasn't 2003. You're an absolute knob." And yes, I am a knob, but now it's my job, which is great. Makes me feel better. I love that somebody in the comments was really liked the Macbeth sin. That, no, I don't hate Shakespeare. I just wish we teach kids about the fun ones, like Hamlet. And they were impressed because they actually did learn about Hamlet, and they thought it was one of the fun ones. I really liked hearing the narrator say, "Pedro Pascal is not my daddy" in this scene. I just love that, because I want Pedro Pascal to be my daddy. Now, the narrator didn't say it quite as saucily as I was hoping, but it still worked really well, because it still had like, it had like an innocence to it instead. It's like, "Pedro Pascal is not my daddy in this scene." It's more like wishing he would check in on his homework rather than the dirty meaning that I had ascribed to it. There's a lady that comes out with this incredible line, which is, "People out there need to get right with Jesus. 3 nails + 1 cross = forgiven, which is amazing. But the sin is obviously, yep, that's the way to get kids into Jesus. Math. Like, that's the missing part there. And I loved hearing the narrator say, "I feel the Lord," when we're talking about raisin cookies. Because, yeah, math and raisin cookies, that's the way to do it. We originally had 4 sin removals. We removed another sin for the score, because the score is incredible. But it's kind of pinching it from the game very much. So it wasn't so much a sin removal for the show, but a sin removal for the game. It would have been an incredible sin if the show hadn't used the score. So it couldn't really win either way. It wasn't getting a sin removal, and yet it would have been sinned for not using it. Because that score is just so good. I think my favorite line in the whole show, though, was when the head of the Fireflies is talking to Kim. Yeah, Kim says, "I can do it." And the reply is, "Kim, you don't have a fucking ear on your fucking head. Could you please?" And it's just, the camera then pans over to Kim looking really sad with an ear missing. And it's a great setup. It's such a beautiful little, you haven't got an ear on your head. Please, you cannot do this. It's so brutal. The way the show kind of like slips in lines of brevity and lines of like humor into really serious moments is so, 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 so great. So the reaction from the narrator was just a ton of laughing, which is pretty perfect. What else did we have? I think that was all for the sins. I love seeing Anna Torv come back. She's great. Loved her in Fringe. Wish she was in more things. She's really, 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 really good. And yeah, I had to sin the fact that there's not enough palettes being moved around because, hey, that's what the video game was. And even Ellie in the game acknowledges that there is a shit ton of palettes being moved around. Because she's always like, oh, what a surprise. I have to get on a pallet again. Because the big thing is she can't swim. So, yeah. But yeah, that's all of my thoughts. Who knows if we'll continue sinning the show. What I will say is I'm not looking forward to sinning episode 3. Love you guys. Bye.
Thanks, Ian, for taking your time. Really appreciate that you decided to travel all the way from England to the US just to record a 7-minute audio clip for me. Really appreciate it. Thanks, dude. Although I did forget to have you comment about the belt clips in that I specifically asked. But don't worry. He sent an email on the plane back. And he said, I think I wrote the belt clips in. I had one and I thought it was so cool. They were not. And he is right. They were not. I felt so justified in believing that that was Jonathan. And I wish it was still. In headcanon to me, that's still true. And Ian did not confirm whether or not Jonathan had one or not. So headcanon for me is still going to say Jonathan had one, even though Ian wrote the belt clips in. I'm loving the show. I'm glad you guys are as well. I'm really looking forward to the rest of the season, and I'm really looking forward to watching you guys tackle the rest of the season because this video was a favorite for me this week. Let's get into it. Let's get into Thursday's video, Pinocchio. Now, I haven't seen this one, but like after the reviews, I have no interest in it. Aaron and Danae writing on this video, and even seeing the Sins video, like I guess maybe I expected worse, but like it's only because like this was just immediately shelled, and because it was a Disney Plus exclusive, like you'd think maybe that would be more accessible for people, but like the only people that I know that watch this movie are people that like watch all the movies. I don't know like how many like casual families saw this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Did you catch this one out?
No, I didn't see this. I had heard enough bad about it, and plus it was confusing because we're hearing already of another Pinocchio with the Guillermo del Toro version was coming out. So this already felt low rent before it even hit. Was it Disney Plus? Did it have a theater? Yeah, well, no. It wasn't a theatrical release.
I mean, it's still a Zemeckis, so like that's something, but...
Yeah, but the fact that they didn't have any faith in it going into theaters sort of said something to me. But no, I didn't watch this. The video is my first actual, like, seeing any frames of it. I didn't even see the trailer for this. Looking at Tom Hanks kind of grind his way through this movie and seeing the scenes of the video, it doesn't seem like anybody was having much of a good time making this. But, yeah.
Let's see here. Good to see all the things that they decided to carry over into the live action remake. They didn't forget the important cricket horn dogging for inanimate objects part.
Yes.
Gotta hate the repeat game. Are you repeating me while watching this video right now? Stop it. No, you stop it. I'm an asshole. I gotcha.
yep.
Jeremy's delivery on that was just perfect.
Mm-hmm.
It's me, Pinocchio, not saying this line in a thick Italian accent and then saving the princess from Bowser.
Yes.
Scooting your booty with the shod foodie when you should when you should wait until the end to use a broom instead.
Yeah, that sounds like classic dicer stuff right there.
I'll hold off on a couple so you can have a chance to talk.
So the explanation that wishing upon a star does not make your dreams come true, and then the apology that you had to come to this channel for the lesson. I thought that was good. The name Pinocchio going to Pinocchio, and why not just call him Woody? It's not like that name is taken. Uh-huh. Cleo, the goldfish, enjoying the belly rub too much. And a pontification on where goldfish genitals are. That's through that sin.
Is the goldfish, you know, genitalia going to be the new cloaca? Like,
oh, I don't know. It's possible. I mean, yeah. I mean, this talks about who's talking for all the some talk. I thought that was a good one. Pinocchio sleeps in a drawer and Geppetto's cat does not. And you're talking about a woodworker who could easily give him a bed if he wanted to. The Honest Jay and Silent Bobcat's in, derived from the etching on the mallet, I thought was good. Are we to chapter 11 yet in this movie? Because Disney needs to file for creative bankruptcy. And it was a scene that, of course, was in the original cartoon that they just redid. Sending the idea of a hot dog being on a charcuterie board, I thought was great. I thought that was great. Yes. Also, and when I saw the lead in to this sin, I was like, that's Fantastic Mr. Fox. And sure enough, when Jiminy Cricket says something like it's about cussing time or something like that. Fantastic Mr. Foxing without mother cussing attribution. And then finally the monstro sin, the animal that provides dark scenes with bioluminescence for movies. I thought that was a particularly good thing. That's one thing that we always don't realize in movies, and movies don't really give us a good explanation of what's going on.
I have three more sins and then a question. The first couple sins, it looks like it looks to me like everything comes in but nothing comes out. Excess cheese consumption.
Yes.
There's a point where like Jiminy is avoiding a bunch of different attacks, and it just the subtitles just read Jiminy screams no and whoa a fucking lot.
Oh my god. That was so annoying to watch, and I was so glad that they sent it the way they did, because I would have done the same thing.
Do you think I'll chase a single peanut M&M under the couch if it falls? Okay, bad example.
yep.
Yeah. And then one question, digging through the comments to try to find some like reaction to this video or some things that people, you know, wanted to ask about. And a lot of people wanted the This Movie Exists sin. And I'm just kind of curious when that sin is applicable. I know it's been on only a rare few. Like, I know the first one was The Amazing Spider-Man. I feel like there was like Lion King or Jungle Book, one of the like Disney live action remakes already had this. So just curious, like when that sin is applicable, when you choose to use it, and like why. I mean, there's a chance that neither of them just brought it up for this one, but like why would this movie not have that sin attached?
Yeah, so, you know, I didn't ask them whether or not they thought about doing this sin. I'm assuming they didn't, because it's not in there. This would be an applicable movie to do the This Movie Exists sin on. I'm just assuming they just didn't write it. So in that case, it's just a matter of writers just not following the old form or whatever, or following the old tradition, which is fine. They don't have to. I got this same sort of question back at a whatever it was a fan fest or something like that we had in Nashville. We had a panel and we showed the Casino Royale video. I think we premiered it there, and it was before it was final. Like, we had still had some things we had to fix in it and everything, but we still showed it to this group in a room. And there was a point where they say Casino Royale and we didn't do a roll credits. And somebody in the audience was like, why didn't you do the roll credits thing there? And at the time, I think I gave them the answer of like, you know, sometimes when they say the name of the movie, it's an obvious, like, we're saying the name of the movie. And sometimes they're just referring to something or whatever. Yeah. And I don't feel like it really deserves a roll credits, because it's something that they commonly say throughout the whole movie or whatever. And that rule, it's not a rule, but that particular rule in my head is commonly broken by every other writer. And sometimes they have the same philosophy as I do about the roll credits. There's a movie actually of a video where the title of the movie is said many times, that we do sin, but I don't think there's a roll credits ever during the entire time. And that's coming out probably in March. But in this case, it was just the fact that the writers didn't write it. And that's what it comes down to. This movie probably could have this movie exists would have been fine for it. But I think also it's because it's the first sin ever, and it's considered, like, you use it in special occasions, I guess, or whatever. I think people just sort of wait for that perfect movie to spring it out again. But this would have been perfectly fine to spring it out on, and that's just the case here. It wasn't a fact. It wasn't a decision not to. It was just that it wasn't written.
Well, here's to hoping that it retroactively gets added in the Guillermo del Toro Pinocchio Sin video. Oh, that the yes. Sin is just Zemeckis's movie exists.
yeah, exactly. Yeah, don't send the fact that Guillermo del Toro's exists. Uh-huh. Send the Zemeckis one in the del Toro one. Yes.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
That'll take us to Friday's video, iPhone action mode. I'm gonna take a stab. Jeremy writing this one?
Yep.
Nice.
Yep.
It's just one of those you could just tell, because Jeremy loves to like nitpick on like one little section of a commercial for so long. And I know Jeremy's been like loving his camera stuff. He shows it off on Twitter and Instagram and stuff like that. Like, he loves all the features and all the cool things he finds out. So it was just kind of fit perfectly. Lots of things that I hated about this video as well, and the biggest one is like, this is the best situation they could have come up with for that. You know, and then a sin later about listing 8 or 9 different alternatives that would have been a better use to show video stabilization. Instead, you got to show this mom who is managing to keep up with the race,
right,
while also shoving through people, like. And then the other sin I had written down was Slut Lizard would be an excellent band name.
Yep. This was funny to me because I think I read the script before I watched the video, the commercial, and he wrote something like, the YouTube version of this commercial has some sort of thing with a slut lizard. And I was like, what the fuck? And I had to watch it right then and there, because sometimes, is this something that is on YouTube that we won't be able to like somehow show or whatever? And I just wanted to see what it was. And like, sure enough, they have this, like, just like this sort of this, there's an advertisement for some other thing where the lizard's not dead or whatever. The lizard just looks dead. But yeah, that was fun running across those last two. Don't really have anything to do with the iPhone commercial at all. Was fun to see it written something about that.
Nice. That's all I had for the video. I mean, I have a question later, but I feel like if you want to get to the ones that you had written down.
I wrote down the general weird organization of this shady race. Like, you know, it's running in mud. It's doesn't seem to be a school thing. They have tents set up. It's around condo buildings. Like, what is this event that people are at? Especially that's so important that this mom is pushing through a whole bunch of people with her iPhone to capture. Jeremy also really good about picking out things that are happening in the background and the people doing a tug of war while the race is going on. They don't even have any interest in the race, but they're over there on the side. They're doing a tug of war or something like that. And then calling out Apple for the child labor, I thought was fun as well. Not that child labor is fun, but calling them out for it is fun.
Nice. I wanted to ask if there was a story time. This one time I was a counselor at summer camp, and they tilled up a section of land about the size of a basketball court and dumped just thousands of gallons of water into it, turning it into the mud pit from the Raid 2. Also, a tip off that this was probably Jeremy that wrote it, mentioning the raid tube. Then they did races and other games until one kid stood up out of the mud with a dark red blood clearly flowing from some kind of stomach wound he had suffered while just sliding headfirst in the mud and scraping on a piece of bedrock.
Jeremy says that this story is absolutely true. He says, I think it was technically a spring weekend retreat and not a summer camp, but it was in South Carolina and it was just laughs and joy and fun for an hour or so until that kid got pierced. And I think it was a tree root that cut him and not bedrock. And he says, but yeah, it was quite the sight as 75 people drenched in mud suddenly realized the fun was over. And yet we were still covered in mud.
That's amazing. Are you ready to move on to Behind the Center?
Yeah.
Well, let's do it. Here's the official audio transition for Behind the Center.
So tell me about yourself.
We're all sinners. Every one of us.
And what happens to sinners?
Get to know each other better, you know?
See, Daddy, sinners have soul, too.
The information, it's too much.
Walk away, March. Just walk away.
Okay. All right.
You were the co-writer on one of the leads on the Everything Ever Once video, and yeah. We got to hear from Dicer about that video as it went public. But I want to hear, like, from your perspective, lots of things that happened. We've gotten to hear a lot about, especially because, you know, Ian was living with Dicer, so a lot about his perspective and point of view. I want to hear, like, your side of the story.
Okay, so. We went, you know, and we also talked about this on our Patreon video too for like a couple of hours, but I'll try to summarize this so it's not so long. I think this would have been the Sin Week movie instead of Ambulance, but we didn't know when it was coming out in Nashville, so no way of knowing whether or not we could have gotten that one at the time. So it was me, Dicer, Ian, and Daniel all watched this movie like on the last day of Sin Week at night in this theater. And I remember watching it and I was disappointed because, first off, the theater that was running it at a very dark image on screen. It was very hard to see a lot of things going on. And it was because it was so late and I was tired from Sin Week, I wasn't really getting where this movie was going for the most part. When the Blu-ray came in, I decided to watch this movie and I watched it and I was like, oh, we really need to do something different with this movie. We can't just send this like normal, because sending it like normal is going to be weird. And I knew that it was going to be me and Dicer because we did Tenet together and we did some fun things with Tenet. Most of the worlds, the universes that you see that are different, that are recurring throughout the video, those were mainly his ideas on that. Like coming up with the public radio one, doing the one where everything is dumb, you know, everything is dumb. He did it, that. And for some of those, I went in writing a certain way. And then I would see what he did and I would like, I went back, I said, okay, once we combined the script, I said, okay, I see how you're doing this now. I'm just going to go ahead and try to conform some of the stuff that I've written into what you're doing here, because in the dumb universe, I was writing a whole bunch of stuff that was dumb, but it wasn't the exact same like thing that he was doing with the dumb universe. So I was like, I wanted to make everything like flow exactly right. Like when you got to that world, you knew that's what you were getting. A lot of that. Now, a lot of the one-offs that go in there, those are a lot of my things that I did. So that's where we have the stuff that's like shot, the stuff we filmed and all that stuff. So a lot of the one-offs are things that I did, because it was the idea that I wanted, original idea that I wanted was that this video would be so big that we'd have like secret videos that would like people could click on and all that. And there's not enough time to get all that going. But there would be secret videos, like maybe a secret flash of a YouTube URL that would pop up or something, or something that you would have to piece together and like, and then type in or whatever, those type of things. But that never came to fruition. So the combining process for this was the most extensive thing that we've ever done. Aaron gave me his sins. I combine them like we normally do, and it's this one big, huge Google spreadsheet of sins that are on here. Every time we got into a new universe, I would highlight what it was, and then I made a separate tab for those universes. Just like, here's all the stuff for the, you know, the one-off universes. Here's the I think the one-off ones, I'm trying to remember. I don't think the one-off ones had all their own tab. So it was all in one thing. It was all in one thing, but all the ones, the dumb universe, the NPR universe, all of these had their own tabs. And so that you just make sure that the editors knew what was going on with this thing. And so like, if there was anything that was just a little off, there was some rewriting that had to get done. And finally, we, after like going back and forth with how these universes would go and what we were had to do, we finally like settled on something. And then our editors went into hyper gear on all of the stuff and said, started tapping people to like, hey, we need your narration. We need you new. We've got this day to shoot. If you want to shoot, I went out to buy wardrobe for these things. On some of the notes, the editor said like, okay, we're going to shoot this and it would be cool if you guys had this and this, you were wearing this or whatever. So like, I went out and found stuff. I found that sweater vest where I'm in there for like 2 seconds, in a sweater vest, found that and found some other clothes for the Siskel and Ebert one. That's in there. We got to shoot at the local Belcourt Theater. That was really cool. That they let us have there, like upstairs theater. They're a small theater to shoot that Siskel and Ebert thing, but also bought clothes specifically for that shoot. And yeah, they told Jeremy to bring the dumbest, you know, something that would be befitting of a Twitch, someone who's on Twitch. And so he found that prototype, basically, of the dings that are all over the little hoodie that or whatever, the one that we sort of rejected, and then we put it in the video, and suddenly there were people who were like, I want that. So yeah, it was that was a demanding process, trying to get that script done, trying to get it combined, trying to get Aaron and I to you know, it's going to sound like we were arguing about how this should go, but no, we didn't argue about anything. It was just trying to reconcile what we have written here and make it all make sense to us and make sense to others and then be able to edit it together. That took a long time to get that script all set up. So most of the time when something didn't quite match, I was like, hey, I see what you did here, Aaron. I'm going to write exactly how you wrote this. And I'm going to change stuff that I wrote to make it conform to that. And then for the Twitch thing, I said, Aaron, I don't know anything about Twitch. Just write whatever you want to on the Twitch thing. So that's where the Jeremy's Twitch stuff, when they're in the universe with the donut universe and everything happens. But
nice.
I don't think there's anything we put in the video necessarily that's like, I guess there's several things we did put in, but they're obvious. Like the email that Jeremy sent to me back in 2012 saying we should do an Everything Right with Prometheus. As a channel back in that time, we had come out with two videos and it was going well, but we didn't know if people would still like Everything Wrong With over and over, or if we needed to just change it up or what. And so there was an idea that maybe people would get tired of this and we'd occasionally throw in Everything Right With. Why don't we pick one that's like a polarizing movie like Prometheus to do that? And that was bandied about. And so, you know, ultimately we chose against it, wanted to kind of keep it the same. So now, you know, then at 10 years later, trying to figure out what the Everything Right With would have been like, it would not have been like what we did in this video. It would have been more straightforward Everything Right With, like we really like this and whatever. I don't even know. We never developed it. It was just an idea that we would do an Everything Right With. Coming 10 years later, what would that channel have been like? We obviously went way overboard as far as like how like effusive, I guess, about the movie, we would be, you know, saying, you know, like, you know, it's like, you know, everything is rainbows and cotton candy and all that. That was just that's sort of a mock idea of what that channel would have been like. I don't think we would have gone over the board. I don't think we would have done it that sarcastic. But I think the idea was, well, if we do an everything right with, do people then demand the everything wrong with? Have we just doubled our workload already before we even started? Like, if we do an everything right with, then people are going to want an everything right with Amazing Spider-Man and everything right with Avengers and everything right with Dark Knight Rises and all that. So yeah, we steered towards just staying negative bastards about everything, and you know, I mean that's what worked out, because it believe me, if we could have done it in a way where we were positive about it all the time, and we felt like that would have could have coexisted on the same channel, we would have. But I think in the end, you have to just like kind of go with like, all right, people like this. We're going to just keep giving them this. And if we think it's getting stale, then people will tell us it's getting stale, and we can change up or just quit. I mean, at the time, it's not like we were making lots of money on these things. So it wasn't like, and it wasn't like something we had to worry about getting totally right off the bat, but we said, well, if this is going to be something, maybe we should just do the same thing over. That's what ended up being why it ended up being so negative all the time, but under the guise of being, you know, humor and things like that. So
this is great, because like you just answered one of the questions that I was submitted to ask, and one of them was you answered two of the three, but with the everything right with, like, were they edited in a way that was like, if that channel had existed and have evolved over 10 years, or was it kind of meant for the style of who was originally pitched? And
it's another one-off that was written. I knew that there were several things that I knew that I wanted to do with this video before we even started writing anything. I wanted to put that email in the video, because I thought that would be a fun thing for fans, especially people who've been around forever, to see that. The fact that I still have that email is awesome. You know, it's I have communications all the way back to 2012 about this channel. The other thing that I knew that was going to be in there, and it was going to be in there like the way I originally envisioned it was going to be in there like several different ways. It was going to be cut up into a different thing, but ended up just being one full Twitch thing. The one with the cast and the directors of Everything Everywhere All at Once, that video was definitely going to be in our Sins video, because it's rare to see people publicly saying that they love us in that business. Mm-hmm. And I knew that video, that part of that video, that Entertainment Weekly thing, was going to have to be in our video because it's mm-hmm. we're already doing a meta thing as it is. We're going to have to stick that in there. And it was just a lot of fun, because when Daniel Kwan brings it up and then his partner hates it or whatever, there's so many things that we can like deal with in our own video about this. It was a lot of fun. I knew that was going to be in there. Now, the next thing that happens too is that video, I think we learned of that video just before we were about to write for it. I think it was like a month or so before we were going to write a script for it. So yeah, I knew the video was going to have to be in there somehow. But the other thing that I suddenly realized while writing this was that maybe they say something about us in the commentary of the movie. So I went and I watched this movie 5 times plus the commentary track. I think may have been 6 times,
like just for the video.
And I went through the commentary track, and sure enough, then, you know, there's that part where it's like, we're going to CinemaSins the rest of this movie. The only regret I have about putting that in our video was that we didn't specify that it was a commentary track, because people sort of got the idea that we got Dan Kwan and Daniel Scheinert to do a thing for us. But I thought it was pretty obvious that it was a commentary track. It doesn't sound like something that is written that you would write for somebody. So but that was the only thing. Even during all the review process, I was like, should we write a disclaimer that this is, I ended up just not saying that. It's just like, I think it would be cool if people just realize that this is something that exists in the world. So we didn't put that disclaimer on there, but I wish I kind of did now. But anyway, did I answer the question or did I go off on a long tangent?
Both, and it's good. It's okay.
Okay. Because it's like, now that I'm here, I'm like, where did we start?
Yeah, it's all good. The other question I was submitted was something along the lines of acknowledging other, if you want to call them copycats, if you want to call them just similar, whatever, just other YouTube channels that have done similar things. And then I kind of wanted to add on to that, whereas there is the Everything Right With universe, I just wanted to know, like, if there was any sort of interactions with other people to kind of clear the air before this video came out.
We haven't had any conversations with anybody who does the copycat stuff. Is that the question? Like,
kind of, yeah. I mean, like, I was just like
reaching out to them. Like, no, wait, that, no.
Because I think somebody could interpret that as a, hey, they're just copying, which the email that you have in there does prove that, like, it was going based off of your original idea, not copying, you know, another channel's thing. So yeah, it's like, yeah. I just didn't know if there was anything like, hey, by the way, we're coming out with this video, it's got this thing, we'd want you to kind of know
the idea wasn't necessarily to be like, hey, we had that idea too. It wasn't like that. Right. But it wasn't about like, hey, we could have done that as well or whatever. It was more about, what would a multiverse CinemaSins look like? And that's why there's so many different versions of us all the way through there. You know, that's why there is a dumb universe, which is, if you wanted to say there was any sort of parody or satire or anything like that in there, that is what people who hate us generally think we are, is that dumb universe, right? But all the other stuff is just a reimagining of what a CinemaSins might look like in another universe, and then Everything Right With is, if you wanted to go by the actual, like, how a universe branches off from another one, the decision not to do an Everything Right With is exactly what this movie is saying, where other universes are branching off. It's from those decision points that you make. You either do this or you don't, but the do part of it branches off another universe, which is where you would get, there's another universe out there where we do Everything Right With. Yes, there are many different ways of having done to do these type of videos, and it had nothing to do with who else was out there, what are they doing. You know, it has nothing to do with that. So I understand where people would come up with that. And like, you think that we're finally getting out our bitterness in this video, and it's really doesn't have anything to do with that at all. It's just, we're just saying this is what a multiverse CinemaSins would be like. These type of different kinds of CinemaSins exist in these other universes. And anyway, I hope that answers the question. I don't know if it does.
For the sake of time, we're going to skip the Three Sins in a Lie video. Okay. Or segment thing. Sorry, Joseph, but you've got plenty in the can, and we got plenty more opportunities to do this as Behind the Sins continues. So that just means we're just going to wrap up with Beyond the Sins.
To infinity and beyond!
Somewhere beyond my wild history.
To boldly go where no man has gone before.
Chris, what is that one thing that you want to quickly recommend, warn, or recommend?
I'm late to the party on this one, but everybody has given their 2 cents, I think, about it. But I really enjoyed The White Lotus. the two seasons that I saw that, I guess there's gonna, I don't know when the third season is supposed to come out, but I watched the first two of this, and I don't know what people have said about the various seasons. The first season is okay, I think. It's like okay. And then the second season is like much better than that first season. The first season's fine. But yeah, it's another one. We have been seeing this a lot recently in a lot of entertainment, where sort of an eat the rich type of thing, where we see rich people in their element acting badly. And the first season has that in spades, where just people are just awful. And there's like a couple of people who shine with humanity through this. But we all, the theme of both of those seasons is that we know someone is going to die. We don't know who's going to die, and it only goes six or seven episodes, and you finally find out who ends up dying and why. And so you're following these storylines, and the first one, like I said, is fine. It's a good starter into this. The second one, there's so much going on. You're like, anything could happen. There's could be a whole bunch, for any reason, this person could kill that person. This person could kill that person. There's a lot of stuff going on there. And I don't know if it's been like, there's been a term coined for this kind of thing. Like, you know, there's, you know, like whodunits or whatever, but this is like a who dies it almost. Like, it's kind of like that. Cause you're sitting there going, okay, who's going to end up biting it at the end. That's what the sort of there's always that thread going through.
I feel like that is still like, kind of like how a whodunit, because like take Death on the Nile on an example, right? They set up five or six different plausible theories that just don't happen to pan out.
Yeah.
Or even like take Glass Onion. Like there's like eight or nine different theories you could make, or again, Knives Out, like eight or nine. So I feel like it's maybe less of a focus. It's more like if you get to see whodunit, like as opposed to a detective's perspective later on. Mm-hmm. It's just a more real time whodunit, right?
Yeah, yeah, right, yeah.
But I like coining this a who dies it. That's a great.
I mean,
term.
They it still does. Yes, it still does have the element of a whodunit, because it's one of those rare ones where it's like both the killer and the victim are secret until the end. So yeah, the second season is where it really shines, and of course that Aubrey Plaza got a lot of like, you know, love for her turn in it. Jennifer Coolidge is having a renaissance, probably well deserved, since she's fantastic, and she's about as fantastic as I've ever seen her in this series. So I can recommend White Lotus.
One I haven't gotten around to yet, but I've made significant cutbacks to the shows on my queue, and this one is still on there. So
yep.
I'm going to recommend a documentary from 2016 called Tower.
Oh.
Have you seen this one?
I have not. I think I've heard of this, though.
It is a rotoscope-style animation documentary. So similar to Flea is probably the closest thing, but...
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But a little bit like more rotoscope.
Right.
It covers the 1966 shooting at the University of Texas campus.
Oh, no, I have seen this. Yes, I have seen this movie. Yes. Okay, go ahead.
I definitely feel like I've heard somebody somewhere talk about it years ago.
Yeah, this was on Mubi a few years ago, and I watched it during our run of Mubi ads on Syncast. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I have seen this. This is excellent. Yes.
Yeah, it's great. It's really highly rated on like everywhere you look. It's just for some reason... documentaries, that's why like not a ton of people have seen it, but like it wasn't even nominated for best documentary that year or best animated feature, and I feel like if this came out this year, I feel like it would have been. I think Flea was nominated for animated film as well. Yeah, Flea, and Flea's great too, right? Like I feel like it, like, kind of shocked, especially with how well this has been received. I mean, like, I think it's like an 8.1 on the IMDb and like a like pretty consistent that score throughout, except for Rotten Tomatoes is like a 94%.
Yeah.
It's like a brief, like 83 minute documentary, but like, here's the reason why I really want to recommend this. There's never shown a face. And I think the name is only referenced twice in the whole documentary of the killer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there is and one of them is a archive newscast footage. I really like Dr. Tower because it focused on the stories of the survivors, or some cases, sometimes victims. And I was really thinking that Tower was going to take this turn where, because it was animated, I thought they were going to take a liberty and tell a story from somebody's perspective, and then at the end it would reveal, actually, I died. And
like
I thought it was going to do that, and it didn't do that, and I thought that was like in really good taste, because I thought it was just going to go for a whammy moment, and it didn't.
Yeah, the other thing that's so great about watching something like this, like Tower explains what it's like with the woman who has to, or the people who have to lie down on the ground in the 100 degree Texas heat. They're on the sidewalk and it's got to be like just burning their flesh off, but they can't get up. They can't possibly get up or else they get shot. You know, you wouldn't get that. You don't get that perspective when you focus on just why the guy did it or, you know, the psychology of the killer and all that. And it is weird how we always seem to like make the victims faceless. I guess it makes it easier for us to digest a story so that we don't.
This documentary made the killer faceless.
Yeah. Yeah.
It made the victims shine. So
yeah, it's amazing.
I think the thing above all of this that stands for me was just, I was born in 95. Right. So my first memories really start to form. Like after 9/11, I still have memories before 9/11, but like, I don't have any memories before Columbine. Like, so I've grown up in an era of school shootings and mass shootings and all that. And it's like, it's one of those things that's really hard to kind of understand, like any perspective before that. Right. So like, and it's one of those, it's awful because like, I'm so desensitized when things like this happen. You know, there was like three mass shootings in California last week.
Yep.
But it's just one of those, seeing Tower, it starts off and it shows these two people that are walking, and all of a sudden they hear like snaps and they're like, oh, it must be kids setting off fireworks. And it's like, there's this calm in the air as all this chaos is about to start happening. Like, even as it's starting, like people are just like, oh, it's just fireworks somewhere. And then she's like, and then I felt something like, you know, just like a shock in my leg. Like all of us, like I stepped on an electric pallet, and then like I was down, and then the person I was with was just like, what are you doing? And then all of a sudden, like they're shot and they're dead now. And then the person's walking by and they're like, what are you guys doing laying on the floor? Like everybody is so oblivious to what is happening.
Yeah.
It was refreshing in a way, like really interesting to see, really interesting to like to see people's reactions. I was trying to think, it was a really good kind of moment for me to try to to get reminded of like the ignorance isn't the right word. Innocence maybe is the right word, of like when these terrible things happen, to see, to get reminded. I mean, again, we talked about how this highlights the victim stories, but heroes too. For little acts and for big acts, but it really kind of highlighted the innocence of trying to frame this happens, it shouldn't happen, and to think of a world where not even 50 years ago something like this would start and people would not have a clue what was going on. It was just just really captured that feeling for me, and kind of, I guess, like sparked or revitalized an empathy in me or something. That was the biggest takeaway for me.
Yeah.
So Tower, it's not streaming anywhere. I mean, you can get it, I think, on Tubi, like with ads, but it's like not streaming anywhere for free. Maybe Canopy, I think. So anyway, Tower.
Yeah. Can second that.
There we go. Well, that'll do it for this week. Thanks again to Chris for hanging out.
Yeah, absolutely.
People can catch you on the live stream on Last of Us Monday nights, potentially going into Last of Us 2 or maybe some other things. I would hope. I haven't been able to tune into any yet, but like, I'm going to be on the lookout for that when I get a little bit more free time in my schedule. Anywhere else you want to send people?
No, not really. I mean, you know, we're still doing Recotopia every week, and you know, we have Tuesday live recordings on Twitch and YouTube, simulcast there. If you ever want to watch us do the podcast that comes out the following week. So there's that. And nothing else really.
Nice. If you're interested in following me, Twitter or Letterboxd at Schweit Castle. If you have any feedback about how the show is going, probably specifically more what you'd like to see in season 4, as we're approaching that one more week of Jeremy on next week, I think that's the plan. And then that'll be it for my run. So if you have ideas on what you want to hear in season 4, go ahead and send those to bts@cinemasins.com or DM the BTS Twitter at cinemasinsbts. And lastly, don't forget to like and subscribe wherever you're listening from, and come back next Thursday for more Behind the Sins content.
All right.
Thanks for listening. Send any feedback to bts@cinemasins.com and be sure to subscribe, rate, and comment. Find more ways to connect by visiting cinemasins.com/BTS.
Welcome to Behind the Sins, your weekly look at all things cinema sins, TV sins, and commercial sins. I'm your host, Aaron, but not that Aaron, of course. But this week, I'm joined by Sif Pop.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Why not?
That's the other podcast.
That giving them time in between seasons is a really good idea, you know, because a lot of times these guys, you know, they're just getting burnt out on this type of thing, and they're not, you know, they give them time to do something really good, except if you're Game of Thrones, where you had a lot of time and you didn't do anything at that last season.
So you're saying that this is probably like better than any Fast and Furious? If you say you really only like those first four, but you think this is better than those four, like...
See, when I say Need for Speed is better than, doesn't mean...
I heard a really fun story. You talk about eating on stuff too. I recently rewatched The Wolf of Wall Street, and I heard a fun story that the scene where Leo and Jonah Hill are on Quaaludes, and then he's like, "Get off the phone!" Like he's like Leo, like he's like actually beating Jonah Hill, like he doesn't know how to like fake do it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's like, yo, so like he's actually like doing everything, you know, hurting him. And obviously, like, I think if it was serious enough, he would have put a stop to it. But Jonah Hill said to get revenge, they filmed a scene later. And it's the scene where, like, they're kind of confronting him. And, you know, Jordan's like, hey, I'm gonna take a step back from the company. And here's the plan. And it's like this, like, the FBI is really honest. I don't know what to do. And like, it's at a lunch thing. And in the script, Jordan is supposed to point out, like, are you going to eat your last piece of sushi? And so Jonah Hill improvised and he said, no, it's okay. You go ahead and have it. Mm-hmm. And because it's Scorsese, they did that take like 100 times. So not prepared for it, Jonah Hill made Leo eat a piece of sushi like 100 times.
Nice.
I had one question to ask Ian about, which was just the Piers Morgan sin. And I only wrote that because I confused Piers Morgan with Jeremy Clarkson. You shouldn't do.
Yeah. I have made people sit through me walking through every little inch of a area. So, you know, it all balances out.
Test, 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 test. Hello, 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 hello. Hello. Hi. Okay, let's try this again. Gosh dang it, I have already recorded this once, but apparently there was some audio flummoxes. So let's try this again.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
A new year, time for new growth. Grow your education and skills with Herzing University. Our online behavioral health programs fit your schedule and time. From an 8-month diploma program in health and human services to a 36-month bachelor's in psychology. Grow your behavioral health career with us wherever you are in your education. Your future starts now at Herzing University. Visit us online at herzing.edu or text health to 85109. Online at herzing.edu or text health to 85109.